Hello, and welcome to episode 24 of That Yoga Woman's podcast, a podcast where yogis, yoga teachers, and studio owners share stories of their lives on and off the mat. I'm Jules Buchanan, a yoga teacher and your host. This week, I'm talking to Karen Lindley. Karen is based in Crick in Northamptonshire and is the founder of Red Hat Yoga and Wellbeing, which she started in 2014. I'm definitely going to be finding out where the red hat comes from. Don't worry about that. She's been teaching 5 classes a week, as well as one-to-ones, hosting courses, events, and retreats before the pandemic. So I'm going to find out whether she's continued with teaching online and where her yoga business is leading her now that things are starting to ease. To give you a hint, Karen is specializing in yoga, coaching, and Ayurveda now with her clients. So I'll be asking her more about that area of the business and why Ayurveda is so important to her. Karen's been practicing yoga since her teens, so we'll find out about how and where she started, as well as discovering more about her yoga journey and what led her to teaching yoga. She started more and more to live yoga from the inside out. Sound familiar? So I'll be finding out more about that, as well as her life before yoga. I'm still coining it LBY, where she was a marketing guru. Her students appreciate her slower, gentle approach, and I'll be asking Karen about this and her passion for more mindful and restorative styles of yoga. I also read that Karen has a passion for camper vans, so I'll ask her about her new van, which is being built as we speak, and what drew her to #vanlife and where she's planning on going in her new van. I really hope that you enjoy listening to our conversation. So, Karen, thank you and welcome to That Yoga Woman's podcast. Can I start by saying, Karen, that C-A-R-O-N, the way you spell your name, is a really unusual way to spell Karen. I've got a little bit of story about this way of spelling Karen. I've got a friend called Karen. We went to Starbucks. She said her name was Karen, and they wrote it in the way that you spell your name on her cup. And we thought they were taking the mick, and we thought, why are they spelling it like that? No one ever spells that Karen like that. I'd never heard that before. And then obviously I come across your spelling. So where does it come from?
Yeah. I was born in the 50s, so I'm a bit of an old girl. And Karen spelt like that is very unusual, as you say, Jules. And it's actually it's a phonetic way of spelling it, as you've just said, Karen. My mum and dad are just working class people, and they like the name Karen, and that's how they thought they spelt it. But when I was growing up, I was quite interested in old film, and there was an actress I discovered called Leslie Caron, and she was quite an icon in the 50s, and my name is Karen Leslie. So I said to my mum, "Oh, did you name me after this actress, Leslie Caron?" She said, "No, I just like the name." Anyway, roll on many, many years later, and my mum, who's now in her 80s and she has dementia, she said to me the other day, she said, "Do you know, you were named after the actress, Leslie Caron." And I said, "Oh, really? I thought you just liked the name."
Imagine her coming out with that.
I know. Isn't it funny? The mind's a funny thing, isn't it? But you're right. There's not many of us. There's many more now. I think it's become quite popular. I always have to spell my name to people.
I bet you do. Yeah, I bet you do. It's the same, although mine's a shortened. I'm always saying, no, it's J-U-L-E-S, because it's like the man spelling. So, yeah, I know what it's like when you have to spell it. And also, I've got another question to ask you. I really need to sort of kick it off yoga-wise about your business. It's called Red Hat Yoga. I did have a little sneaky peek on your website to find out what on earth where that comes from. But can you just tell us, please? I think there's a couple of reasons for it, right?
Yeah, that's right. I trained as a Six Thinking Hats education facilitator many years ago. And Six Thinking Hats comes from Edward de Bono, who is the father of creativity. He's written lots of books on creativity, and Six Thinking Hats was his take on Western thinking. He said that unlike Eastern thinking, where it's very multi duplicitous, if that's such a word. In the West, it's very linear. So he was encouraging people to think metaphorically about how they think. And he came up with six different modes of thinking. And it was your metaphorical, put your thinking cap on. And he gave them different colours to denote different kinds of thinking. So red hat is your intuitive hat.
Ah,
it's the hat that you put on if you want to think intuitively, thinking heart and thinking gut. So I thought that was really, really appropriate for a yoga business, actually, because it's all about the inside, isn't it? It's not about the shapes, it's about the inside and how we think. And the second reason I wanted to call it is that my market tends to be older people. And I've always had this idea, mainly because it's the reason why I got into yoga, that I wanted to stay healthy for as long as possible. I came across a poem by a poet who's now passed away. Her name's Jenny Joseph. Okay. And the poem is called Warning. Can I read it to you? Have we got time?
Yeah, you've got time. Go for it.
When I am old, I shall wear purple with a red hat that doesn't go and doesn't suit me. And I shall spend my pension on brandy and summer gloves and satin sandals and say we've got no money for butter. I shall sit down on the pavement when I'm tired and gobble up samples in shops and press alarm bells and run my stick along the public railings and make up for the sobriety of my youth. I shall go out in pink slippers in the rain and pick flowers in other people's gardens and learn to spit. You can wear terrible shirts and grow more fat and eat 3 pounds of sausages at a go, or only bread and pickle for a week and hoard pens and pencils and beer mats and things in boxes. But now we must have clothes that keep us dry and pay your rent and not swear in the street and set a good example for the children. We must have friends to dinner and read the papers. But maybe I ought to practice a little now so that people who know me are not too shocked and surprised when suddenly I am old and start to wear purple and a red hat.
I've heard the poem before, but I didn't know there was the red hat bit.
And for me, that stands for freedom and spaciousness and dependence. And that's what I hope that people who come to my yoga classes and who I connect with, that's what I hope yoga will give them, because that's what it's given me.
Oh, lovely. That's a really nice name. Thank you for sharing that with us.
You're welcome.
So let's just take some time to go back to the start of your yoga journey. I read that your first yoga experience, Karen, was when you were 13. Now, I'm not being rude, but that was quite a long time ago. So can you just tell me a bit more about what that was like?
Yeah, so back in the day, in the 70s, my mum decided to go to a yoga class at the local YMCA on a Sunday afternoon. And she took my brother and I with her. So I was 13 and he was about five, I suppose, because we couldn't stay at home alone and she needed somebody to look after us. So she took us to the class and it was full of middle-aged women who were all about 30 actually. and we were the only children there, and of course in those days it was much more relaxed, you know, and everybody was very welcoming and paid a lot of attention to us because we were really good at yoga. We had these young, flexible, bendy bodies. And so we really love the attention. So that was the start.
The start of the journey.
Yeah, it was back in the time when, you know, back then, the yoga used to be on TV as well. I think it was London Weekend Television, Richard Hittleman, and is responsible for lots of older ladies starting their yoga journey, I think. Yeah. It was all a bit weird, wasn't it? And a bit hippie-ish back in the 70s.
Yes, it's funny you say that because I've got an older guy comes to my classes, Charles, shout out to Charles. And when he came through the door, he was like, really thought it was going to be hit. And he said, oh, I thought it would be all the old hippies coming in here, but it's not, is it? And I was like, no, it's not. Don't worry. I don't know whether he was disappointed, but he stayed. So he's all right. And just your upbringing, you were brought up in the Northwest. So I've just moved to the coast myself. Do you miss living by the sea? And have you got any plans to go back?
Yeah. I live in Northamptonshire now, which is about as furthest away from the sea that you ever can be. And I think actually as I get older, the older I get, the more I want to be back to the seaside. It's like the sea calls you, the ocean calls you. And I still go back to the Wirral where I was dragged up and spend as much time by the sea as I can. And I do plan to go back at some stage, yeah.
And then can we talk now about your LBY, your life before yoga? It's a new phrase I'm coining, a new acronym. Having had a little nosy around your LinkedIn, it looks like to me from the outside, you had a really successful career in marketing. So you've got a slew of like head of marketing, marketing director roles under your belt. Is that the case? And what was it like?
I had a marketing career from about the age of 30, I suppose, and worked my way up. And I worked for largely educational companies, first in bookselling and then in recruitment and in educational software. And I've also did a couple of roles in further education colleges as well. And like all jobs, they have their highs and their lows, don't they? What I particularly loved about marketing was rebranding, anything creative. I really loved that aspect of it and bringing teams together and making changes, some deep strategic changes within a business to help them become more profitable. The lows, I suppose, was the, I think marketing isn't always glamorous. There's a lot of drudgery. There's a lot of administration. There's a lot of stuff that needs to get done. And what I particularly didn't like, I think there was a pattern really, because I worked with alongside lots of sales teams. And when a campaign was successful, it was, fantastic. We're sales heroes. Isn't it wonderful? And when sales didn't work, it's like marketing's fault. So I didn't like the blame culture.
Exactly sales people having come from a sales background, that sounds very familiar.
And I suppose what I found frustrating is the lack of understanding about the great role that marketing can play in organizations, particularly if they're young organizations, so they haven't got the full understanding of the marketing mix. It covers every single aspect of the business. And I used to rock up at senior meetings and they'd look at me and say, but you're from the colouring in department, what are you doing here? So yeah. We had some lively debates. So I found it very exciting. I did lots of great, wonderful things and created lots of amazing events. But it took its toll traveling around the country. And actually, the more I got into yoga, the more I realized that I was actually a bit of a square peg in a round hole, or the other way around, whatever it is. I'm not very good on the metaphor.
No, that's right.
The fit wasn't there. And so it probably wasn't the best career for me. And that's what causes the stress. If you're not in a job that you truly love, where the job is easeful, then you know that you're not in that sweet spot. And I think you owe it to yourself really to find something that is more suited to you and that you're going to enjoy, because we're only here once, aren't we, Jules?
We are indeed. Did you kid yourself on, Karen, for a bit? Because I was talking to the last lady I interviewed, actually, Rosie. We had a bit of a conversation about kind of you just throw money at things because you have the money and you just kind of make things better. But really, you know, when you get to that point, we're like, actually, I'm just not happy. I need to make a change. Yeah.
You have the company car, you have the briefcase, you have the company credit card. You can do whatever you want. You're your own boss. But actually, at the end of the day, is it fun getting up at, 5 o'clock in the morning and getting in the car and going at the M6, not getting home till 9 o'clock at night and having a report to do? You know, the toll that it takes on your body. And I think, a lot of organisations, you were just a number, and, there's a lot of burnout that happens as a result of selfish bosses and selfish companies. That's that, in my humble opinion. You can tell that, can't you?
I can tell that, no. But it's true. I agree with you. I do think
you kid yourself on, and you you have the holidays, and and also, I got into that cycle. I kept getting promoted and thought, oh, actually, I must be quite good at this.
It's flattering, isn't it, when that happens?
Yeah, it is. You get completely tired, and then you get the company shares, and you think, oh.
Yeah,
and then you get scared, thinking, actually, can I do something else? Can I start again?
It's a big ask. So what was there a decision point that made you move to teaching yoga full time? Was it a slow transition? It tends to be, speaking to people have done their training and then they do a couple of classes a week and then they realize, actually, I much prefer yoga than teaching from my corporate job. How was it for you, that kind of realization?
That journey. Well, I decided I was going to leave, but it was a matter of time. So I left and started my own business as a marketer, as a freelance marketer, and I worked for several small companies doing various sort of tactical marketing stuff, the colouring in, if you like, the essential stuff. I did that for a while, and at the same time that I started training to be a yoga teacher.
Right. So you had more flexibility.
Yeah, that's right. And then, I had the opportunity to go back in to be a full-time corporate bod to run a marketing team. And I decided that, yes, I'd join the corporate organisation, but I wouldn't do it full-time. So I did it 3 out of 5 days. And that was a big mistake, really, because once you get a desk and you get a chair and you get a monthly paycheck, they think you own you.
Yeah.
And I found that actually I didn't have the flexibility that I had when I was self-employed. But the money was really good. I qualified and I started teaching on the 2 days that I wasn't in my corporate role. And I enjoyed it so much that I decided that actually I can build this up and I can make this into a business, and I can recover quite a lot of the income that I was getting from this 3 days a week. How naive is that?
I was going to say, I was like, my ears pricked up then. I thought, Karen, that's amazing. I'm all ears. How you managed to do that?
Did it all work out?
So you did some paperwork, you worked it out on paper that it
Oh, but of course, I'm a marketer. I'm a strategic marketer. So I put a business plan together where my income streams are going to come from and how I was going to transition. Oh, and I had it all worked out. So I managed to persuade my husband, who was very doubtful. But that's what I did. And I left. And I remember the managing director said to me, well, have you got a sustainable business? And I just said, yeah. And of course, we know, if we've been teaching a while, it is really hard work. face-to-face teaching, that is not a sustainable business, you know. It's quite funny, isn't it, when we think about all that we've been through and we've got these online models now, which can create a sustainable business. But, you know, back then, 7 years ago, you know, a lot of people weren't online. And yeah, so that's what I did then, Jules. I just went for it. I had a belief that over time it would work out. I did have savings, so I had a comfort blanket, and I worked my socks off. I took any job that was offered to me, as well as building up my own classes. So I taught in schools. I trained to be schools yoga teacher as well, teen yoga teacher. Worked in schools. I had a job in mind, and I taught my own. I developed my own classes as well. And I was teaching at one point, I was teaching about 14 classes a week. And when the classes are full and you've got waiting lists and everything's going well, then you can recover really good income. But it's up and down, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's
completely it is up and down.
And some months it's like, oh, great. Yeah. And what I found is that if you're not careful, you lose the love of teaching because it's such hard work. It's physically hard work on the body. And I was wrecking my body. I was in so much pain physically and stressed, completely stressed. You have that idea of going to class all calm and it's like, oh, I'm late, and you get there and it's all calm. So what I learned about it is that really that you have to build slowly. It's helpful if you've got some other forms of income so that you can continue doing what you love in a way that you love.
I think those are really wise words. You can kind of not fall out of love with it, but you sort of forget why you're there. I think I've my personal experience teaching a lot less over the last 12 months. When I have taught, I've really loved it. And it might be that not many people have come to this particular online class, but I think, well, firstly, this is a service for my students, so they can come to whatever class they want. It just so happens that this time, this class isn't as busy as I'd have liked. And before, if I'd have gone to a hall or something, I'd have seen each class individually, and I'd have been the whole time, I think, I'm losing money here, or, you know, I'm not earning enough from this class. And that would have been going on in my mind for quite a while. But actually, it's like, well, it doesn't matter because I've made my money this month. The thing that is frustrating still a little bit, because I don't charge, I don't know whether you do this, but I don't charge like a monthly fee per class still, but I'll just have people, I'd fell asleep, or I can't come, I've got a dentist or appointment or something. So it's not a reason that they don't want to not come, or that it's not about the money for them. There's something that means they can't come that week, and they can't really come to another class. I know it's online, they could, but perhaps they've got other stuff on and it wouldn't fit in with the schedule. But then I do think, well, that's a moment for them where they're like, oh yeah, I just can't do it, but that's money for me and it affects my income. So interesting, isn't it? I don't know, how do you make things a bit smoother now? Is that what something you've managed to achieve with what you're doing?
My business has shrunk dramatically. I had about 110 students coming regularly.
Wow, that's massive, yeah, Karen, isn't it?
Yeah, and probably I have about 30 now.
Wow.
But they come more than once a week, which is good.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of people dropped away. They've just decided not to come online for whatever reason. And I think the main thing was people didn't expect lockdown to last as long as it has. So they thought, well, I'm not going to bother learning the technology. I'm just going to wait and see what happens. Mm. And they've gone off and done other things. So I've got a much, much smaller business. I've reduced the number of classes. I'm now down to, I just teach twice a week, different styles of yoga, and then I do two monthly offerings. And actually, because I don't have the overheads now, it's not too bad. You know, I'm glad I haven't got a mortgage and children to feed and clothe, quite frankly. But it's doable. You just cut your cloth accordingly. Mm. And as you have said, those classes are very joyful. People do come. I charge per class, the six class pass scenario. People book. I have Mind Body, that very, very expensive booking system, because the business was so big before. And
right.
Back in the day, I was planning to set up a commercial studio. So I thought, right, well, I might as well set up everything how I need to run. And then my priorities changed and I decided that's not what I wanted to do. You know, thank goodness I didn't do it.
Yeah.
You know, my heart goes out to all those people who have got, you know, a huge, huge investment like that. But I use MindBody and I've still got it, and it's completely not worth it because of the number of people I have in my classes. So I am in a time of transition to look at how I can reduce my costs even further and create a really enhanced experience for my students. And I've got an online learning hub, if you like, and I'll be putting courses on there, and I will be offering a monthly membership too.
Mm-hmm.
So that people can practice when they want to, but with a teacher who they know.
Yeah.
And so it's more of a blended, a hybrid approach. I can't teach in the community now because I'm my husband's carer. He has a lung condition. So even though we've been vaccinated and we're coming out of lockdown and it's relatively safe, you know, any infection could be fatal for him. So I really need to choose the opportunities when I go out and who I teach. And so I'm not going to be going out and saying to anybody, oh, come to my class, please come to my class, because that's not where I can be now. So it's offering a really wonderful experience for those students who choose to come and who want to study yoga quite seriously. It's not just something you do when there's nothing better on telly, and I've done Zumba last week, so I'll try yoga this week.
Sounds good. We all know those people, don't we? I read that you said you started to live yoga from the inside out. And I really like the way that you've said that. I think I can relate to that. Can you just explain a little bit more about what you mean when you said that?
Yeah. When you first do yoga, then it's very much a physical practice. That was my experience anyway. Although I started yoga when I was 13, I had big gaps throughout the years when I didn't do any for ages. It was always a physical practice until I was in my 40s, and I was extremely stressed in these marketing jobs when I started going two or three times a week, and it stopped being a physical practice for me. I think just the sitting in stillness just helps the mind calm, and all the things that we know. You really get to know yourself, and it's big questions to be asked really about why we run around doing what we do.
Mm.
And it's only then, I think it's only then, when you stop through practices like pranayama, through mindfulness and meditation, does yoga start to come on the inside, and you become much more led by your own personal life compass, if you like, and make decisions based on how you feel in your heart, what's right for you, as opposed to what society says you should do and what employers, what the environment, you know, external forces say that you should do. I think you're much led. And so it's that sense of being totally integrated in how you feel and how you behave and your values. They all start to align. And that's one of the reasons why I left corporate world, because, I was having to write copy about products and services that didn't have as much integrity as I thought, particularly in the education sector. And I felt I can't do that anymore because I'm led, very much led, about how I feel, and it has to align for me.
Yeah.
So what you see is what you get, basically. And so that's what I mean about, you know, living yoga on the inside.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I know I mentioned Rosie a bit earlier, but she used to sell medical devices, and she said exactly that. This kind of integrity wasn't as she expected. And with marketing and sales, you still need to really believe in what you're doing, don't you? I think that's become clear, and that's what one of the reasons that she left. And it sounds similar to you that you know that you're just kind of losing a bit of faith in what you're trying to promote. You really start to question what you're doing. What is it then?
Life is so short, isn't it? And you know, we have to do what we can to make a real difference, because it's important for ourselves to do that.
So has that shift led to a bit of a change? Obviously it led to a change in you moving towards a yoga career in the first place, but has that also helped to fuel your shift then, guided by the impacts of the pandemic, into this kind of new business approach that you're taking?
Yes, I think so. I started studying Ayurveda in 2016, and the more I learned about Ayurveda is a sister science of yoga, which I know that you'll appreciate and will have done some study on. But the more I got to know about Ayurveda, the more it made absolute sense, because actually, back in the day, thousands of years ago, you weren't allowed to do yoga until you'd done Ayurveda. So Ayurveda was a very practical science of well-being and health, and yoga was a spiritual practice. It's quite interesting now that actually Ayurveda is very little taught in the UK, and not generally known. You know, if you talk to people about Ayurveda, they look at you because they just haven't heard of the word.
Or it's a kind of, they think it's a special diet or something.
That's the way it's kind of promoting
a special way of eating. I've kind of come across it more and more.
It's a lifestyle practice for total well-being and longevity. Yoga, sort of physical asana and pranayama and meditation, are all part of the practices, as is eating, as is diet. Very much looked at food as medicine, and within that you have all the herbs and spices which have medicinal qualities. But for me, it's about how you live your life and whether you are in rhythm with yourself and in rhythm with nature, because the belief from Ayurveda is if you are out of rhythm, it causes dis-ease in the body, which creates disease. And so the more I heard about it, and the more I just fell in love with it, I actually went to a Ayurveda doctor when I was in India about 2014, actually, before I left to become a full-time yoga teacher. And this doctor looked at me and she said, if you don't stop doing what you're doing in the way that you're doing, you'll be very sick when you're older. So you have to stop, you have to change your lifestyle. Wow. I was like, oh, really? Because, you know, they're very specialized and they're very observant about the way you speak, the way you move. It's all about energy, of course, the doshas. And it's just knowing yourself very, very deeply and being able to design your own prescription for good health, if you like. So I have been practicing an Ayurvedic lifestyle for some time, and I've taken formal qualifications and decided I want to incorporate a lot more of that in my classes, which I have been doing for about 18 months now,
right?
And running retreats on the Ayurvedic theme. And now I'm launching, or have launched, my first annual program called Vibrant Living, which teaches the 10 key habits from yoga and Ayurveda, which will help change your life in terms of your health and your well-being. And when you get all that sorted, when you are at total ease within mind, body, heart, spirit, then it opens up to a deeper dharma. And then you start being led even more about the change that you can make in the world.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So that's quite a big departure then from kind of the more of the membership and the weekly kind of classes, the month to month, that so people would sign up for a year's program.
Yes, that's mm-hmm. right. And it's premium priced as well. I'm launching with 5 people. They're only small groups, and we meet once a week. And I do some practices, and I coach online. I do group coaching. I do individual coaching ones to ones throughout the year. And then there's a whole library of resources teaching the lessons. People are loving it. And I did Ayurvedic lifestyle consultations with people last week, and they're all saying that it's far more than they thought it was going to be, and it's starting not only to change their own lives in such a short time, but influencing their families as well.
So, wow, that's interesting.
Yeah.
And it sounds like your face is lit up when you're talking about it. So before the pandemic, you were very much kind of Northamptonshire based. Presumably going online has meant that you've sort of broadened your customer or client base. Yeah.
Yes, in that people who have moved away have been right. able to come online and join in the classes. And friends in I've had a girl in New Zealand who's joined, and Wales, and where else? Spain. So actually it has a bit more of an international feel to it. And the Vibrant Living, my new program, is international. People can join from anywhere in the world. But you still got to do the marketing, and it's a very competitive market because there's lots of people doing online programs now.
Right.
It's new for me, and I think it's quite an innovative program. But there's a lot of people doing a lot of stuff online, and people are getting very used to sourcing personal development programs and yoga programs online now as well. So I think the pandemic has opened up the opportunity for us and created more competition.
Yeah. It's hard to differentiate, I think, unless, like you say, you've got your marketing background, so that should come naturally to you. But it is difficult when, I know if people, like unrelated to yoga, if I'm on a forum or something to do with, I don't know, swimming or whatever, if someone mentions yoga, it's all Adrienne and all the free stuff online all comes up, and I just feel like recoiling and just crying in a corner.
I know there's so much online.
Competing with your premium price your competition, but also people that are doing stuff a lot at like bargain basement kind of pricing as well.
When I started on Zoom, because I was very unconfident on Zoom, you know, it scared the hell out of me, really, like a lot of people. So I did a month of free classes, and my classes were full. I had lots and lots of people coming. And then when I started charging, people dropped off, and I did a little survey and said, oh, that's interesting, they're not coming anymore. And one guy said, you're too expensive. And I thought, what part of too expensive is free?
Yeah.
So I said, oh, well, and he said, I did think that because you've got no halls, no village hall to hire, you know, you could have made it really cheap. And I said, oh, actually, the village hall is only a very small part of the, you know, you're paying for my expertise and my training, you know, thousands of hours of training, thousands of hours of, you know, of paying. But at the end of the day, it's up to them, isn't there? So there'll always be people who want cheap and cheerful. There'll always be people who will want to pay a bit more and will value what you do. And they're the people that I think we need to go and find from a marketing point of view. Yeah.
Yeah, the people that want to work with you, like you say, value what you
do. That's right. Yeah.
And you said also, Karen, that your classes are like slower, mindful, more restorative. What is the reason that you prefer to teach in that way?
Because I love those styles myself.
Just talking to you, I think it really suits you, but I just wanted you to say.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. And I just think that slowing down, as I've said before, is what we all need. It's what I need. And it's only in slowing down can you connect with yourself. And the insights come and you can breathe more fully and just connect with what's beyond yourself, really. That doesn't sound too weird, but I think you know what I mean.
No, I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah. I know. Yeah. And I just think, you know, it gives you the chance as a teacher, when you're teaching mindful, slow styles, it gives you a chance to impart more wisdom to students because they are more receptive, because the mind has slowed down. Whereas with, you know, fast yoga styles, it's not something I hugely enjoy myself. You know, I'd rather go and go to the gym. No, I wouldn't actually, no. I do personal training, I run, and I do bar. There's lots of other ways that I can actually get my cardiovascular and get my stretch. I think yoga for me is something beyond that, so yeah, that's why I do it.
So let's move on to a different topic now, camper vans. Tell me, please, I've read that you've got a new van. So how did that come about? What prompted that purchase?
Okay. Well, it's being built at the moment, Jill.
Okay.
So I haven't taken ownership of it yet, but it's grey and it's got seagrass interior.
Ooh.
And it's all very scrummy. So I've sort of designed, it's not a new van, it's a second-hand van, but it's a new build. And I've wanted a camper van for 20 years and could never ever afford it. And so I've been saving in the form of a pension since I was 22. And when my pension matured and I got the little lump sum, I just thought, I'm going to have that for my camper van.
Sounds
and
good.
I needed to save a little bit more money and do that. And actually, if truth be told, the idea of soul camper vanning is terrifying, but it's something I really want to do. That sense of adventure and freedom. I love being out in nature. I already spoke about, you know, the Ayurveda connection with nature. I just love being out. There is a Insta hashtag called Van Life. I don't know whether you've heard of it.
I have heard of it.
But it's like 9.5 million subscribers and the most beautiful pictures. And it's like, you know, is it like that all the time? And people say, yes, it is. Yes, it is. Most of the time you may have the rain and you may have the wind and the hailstones. And there may be times when you run out of electricity or whatever. But actually on the whole, it connects you with nature. So it's something I've always wanted to do. I've saved up and it's arriving at the end of June.
Ooh, it's exciting.
It is. And she's going to be called Iris.
I was going to ask you what surname. I didn't know if it was a he or a she. So
she's
Iris.
She, no, she's very girly. She's Iris.
She? she's definitely a woman. You look at me like, well, of course it's not a man. Oh, funny. And so Iris, where does that come from? It's just,
well,
you just like the name? Or is it an after a really old film?
No, everything's thought through, Jules.
I thought you were channeling your mum then.
So Iris in Greek mythology is the messenger along the rainbow, which stretches from heaven to earth.
Oh.
And Iris is the go-between of Hera and, I've forgotten the god, never mind, Hera and her consort. It's just gone. It's over there. so she's the messenger. She's sending messages back and forth. So I thought that was quite nice. But Iris's father is the god of the sea, god of the ocean. So there's a bit of the coast coming in there,
right?
And the mother is the sky. I'm Vata constitution, which is very much about air and space.
Right.
So I felt that was very, very appropriate. You're looking at me as though I've gone absolutely mad here. And the child of Iris in Greek mythology is Eros, love. And I think that's what we all want, isn't it? That's what we're all striving for, really, a sense of connection and a sense of love. And the iris, the flower. See, I think these through.
That's what I'm looking at you like, wow, like I did not expect such a
So iris, the iris flower has three petals. And in the mythology, the petals stand for wisdom and courage and tenacity. So I think they're the qualities I need moving forward in my life. Aww. So she's Iris.
That sounds, well, you've definitely thought of that through. I hope you're going to have a little name plaque somewhere just to remind yourself. And I've got to ask you, where is your destination? What's on your destination list?
Well, the coast, of course. So Norfolk, Suffolk, down in Devon, Cornwall, the Wirral. Still got family up there, so I should be using my van to stay in when I visit them. And I'd really like to do the north coast of Scotland, I think it's called the NS 500, which looks absolutely fantastic, and it'll take quite a while to do it. And Northumberland, where you are, I think it's an amazing coastal line. So just want to travel as much as I can. I think, you know, my goal this year is to get out, to get used to the size of the van. I drive a Fiat 500 at the moment, so
oh, wow.
A little bit different. Just get used to the van, get used to parking it and all the stuff you need to do, and then hopefully next year get out for longer trips.
Wow. So that it will be a big difference. You don't need a new license, do you, for a like a, you don't need a separate kind of
no, I think
thinking
you do,
of a bus. I think,
yeah,
it's,
I think
a bus,
right, if you have a bus. No. And there are some big vans out there, big beasts out there. No, this is a VW camper van, so it's it's as long as my drive. So
is it an old school one with like the chrome
it's a newish van. The old vans are absolutely lovely, but I think there's people say unless you've got a bottomless pot of money, then don't touch them, or if you're handy, which I'm not, so.
No, and I imagine there's not the mod cons in them that there would be taken for granted now in the newer type of vans.
I've got heating and I've got a porta potty as well, quite essential when you get older.
Well, any time, I would say. So what are the pros and cons, do you think, that you'll come across in your hashtag van life going forwards?
I'm thinking there's going to be more pros than cons.
Yeah.
Obviously the fantastic views, the quirky people you meet out there. I mean, I belong to a few Facebook groups with women have camper vans and so forth. So many interesting people with interesting stories. So I think that's going to be absolutely great. I think the cons, well, yeah, emptying your loo, not looking forward to that. Carrying my water.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a bad con, is it, really?
No, I think, you know, there's some glamorous parts of it, but, you know, it's an excuse to buy some new camping gear, isn't it? Camping
Exactly. So is there anywhere, it sounded like when you said where you wanted to go, you were going to almost do a whole trip around the UK. Would you venture further afield in the future?
I think for solo adventures, in the UK, I'd feel much more comfortable. But I do have friends who have vans and they do go away for, you know, several months of the year. At the moment, I can't do that because I have caring responsibilities. I have to stay closer to home. But at some point, yeah, I would hope that I'd have the confidence to go to France and Spain and maybe even further afield. Yeah.
And I read that you like hiking and that you started the Camino Way. Can you just tell me a bit more about that?
Yeah, so I did the first leg from France over the Pyrenees to Pamplona, just inside Spain. That was for 5 days, covered about 50 miles, I think. Mm. And so we've got another five stages to go. I would like to go back and do that as a big journey in one go at some point, but it's fantastic. I really enjoyed it.
I was going to ask you if you recommended it because I'm I like walking and my dad likes walking, and I think that's on he hasn't really got a list, but I think it'd be a nice one for us to do together.
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, I did meet a father and daughter trekkers when I was on the Camino, and they were doing the whole 6 weeks, and they had a most marvelous time together, and they were such fun. They just really enjoyed each other's company, and I recall that the daughter was just about to go to university, so this is probably the last opportunity her dad would have of spending quite a lot of time with her.
And
we kept hearing about their adventures as well, you know, through the network of how they were getting on. So
nice.
Mm-hmm. But what's so interesting is there's so many of these pilgrims' ways throughout the world, and the route from France to Spain. There's many different routes you can take, depending on what kind of route you want to do. There is a coastal route that you can take as well. You can go from Portugal all the way on the Portuguese coast and into Spain as well. So,
right.
Yeah. So lots of adventures can to be had. Do it, Jules. Do it.
I will. I'll try. Well, just need to get. We need the world to start moving a bit more smoothly, don't we? At the minute.
Yeah, we do. It's true.
So, Karen. Lastly, what are you most proud of in your life so far?
Oh, that's a good question. I think that I am most proud of my ability to transform, to pivot when needed, and to thrive. I've had lots of careers. I started as a children's librarian, became a teacher, and then transitioned into a marketer, and then became a yoga teacher. Along the way, I've done training as well, and coaching. So every 7 to 10 years, I've found that something's happened in my life which has been a catalyst for change, and it's been scary and you question your ability to actually do it. But it's just taking that leap of faith and, trusting, having faith that things will work out. So I'm proud of that. I think no matter what life throws at me in the future, I think I've got the inner resources that will see me through. So proud of that, I think.
You should be. Do you think there's something in that 7 to 10 year, almost like an itch? Because that's really, that resonates with me. I've definitely experienced that 7 to 10 year and then move on. So it's really interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is. And it's also interesting to reflect back what the threads are. Because even though we may go and do different jobs or different careers, there's a common thread, isn't it? Mine is supporting and helping people. That has always been a driver. Even in corporate marketing, you know, it is supporting and helping people and growing teams. And that's what I hope to be doing until I'm at least 96, when I'm very old, wearing purple and a red hat.
Your red hat. And so if you weren't a yoga teacher, what would you be?
I think I'd be quite sad, really.
I meant like a job.
I know you did. Oh dear.
You have to give me a career. You can't just say really sad. I love that.
I think I would have a market garden and grow all my own produce. I think I quite like to do that. So who knows? Maybe that's the next 10 years.
Do you do any gardening?
I do gardening, but I don't grow vegetables. No. But I always think it'd be a wonderful thing to do. Mm. So, a friend of mine's actually picked up a market garden, as you do, from a 92-year-old yoga teacher. She lives in Shropshire. And it's sapphic land. It's very balanced, sacred land. And she didn't know anything about it. And she's learned and has amazing crops and now sells to shops.
Wow.
She's a proper little market gardener, and that's happened in a space of a year. So
it can be done.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I've got quick fire questions for you now, Karen.
Yeah.
Just say what comes into your mind. So late to bed or early to rise?
Early to rise, because that is an Ayurvedic habit. Get up before the sun.
Really? Yeah. Do you do that every morning?
Not every morning.
It was
pretty hard in January and February.
Oh, yeah, I bet.
But for the rest of the year, I'm usually up 5:30-ish.
Wow.
Starting my day. Very difficult to get up before the sun here in the Northern Hemisphere, but in the summer.
Yeah, well, I was just thinking that you'd have to get up really early this morning.
Exactly.
You'd have
been,
we've gone off a tangent. Sorry. Favourite tune to dance to?
I don't know. I don't know. Anything which is lively, anything which is that has lively beats. I absolutely love Latin American music. I love Spanish music too. Anything with those sort of vibes I love. Yeah.
Nice. Who do you look up to?
I look up to most people because I'm very short.
good answer. Favourite film?
My favourite film is, I really love Tootsie with Dustin Hoffman.
Mm.
It's just such a wonderful film.
I thought you were going to say another one. Are you sticking with Tootsie?
I am.
Okay. How on a scale of 1 to 10, how cool are you?
And what do you mean by cool?
You know, cool dude.
A cool dude. Well, according to my doshic type, I'm Vata, so I'm very cool.
That's so good. So you're a 10. Would you say 10, Karen?
But I can be a bit of a stress head, so get the heat rising there. So somewhere in between. I'm sitting on the fence.
You are a bit. Mountainside or lakeside?
Oh,
don't say mountain by a lake, because that's not allowed.
Yeah, mountains. Okay. But I love water.
Tom Hanks or Leonardo DiCaprio?
Leonardo DiCaprio.
What's your star sign?
Scorpio.
Who would you swap lives with just for a day?
I would swap lives with my mum.
Oh. Countryside or city?
Countryside, of course.
If you owned a yacht, what would you call it?
Blimmin' heck, a yacht.
Mm.
I'd call it nausea.
What, like, as in be sick?
Yeah. Because that would be me on the yacht.
It sounds quite a nice name, doesn't it?
Nausea. A Greek goddess of the sea.
Oh, what is at the top of your bucket list?
I'd like to go to New Zealand. I want to do some trekking through New Zealand. And I'd like to hire a camper van in New Zealand. Yeah, and I'd like to do the whole island. It's supposed to be so beautiful.
Describe your baddest and brightest leggings.
They are pink and blue and green, so they're very multicoloured. They no longer fit me. They're about six tie sizes too big.
That's good.
Because one of the things about an Ayurvedic lifestyle, you do drop weight pretty easily. But I won't throw them away because they're so beautiful. I actually thought I could make some bunting out of them to put on Iris.
Oh, that's a nice idea. That's a great idea. That's lovely. I love that. Please, can you do that? That would be really nice.
Send you a picture.
Yeah. What's your favourite place in the whole wide world?
I love Mallorca.
And what's your favourite yoga pose?
Swan, sleeping swan, which is a yin pose.
Nice. So that brings us to the end of your quick fire questions. Have you got a favourite music or sound that you like to savasana to? Yes. Savasana sound. Can you give me that track, please, so that people can have a listen to it?
Silence.
Ah, really? Interesting. I was ready with my pen then. You see, I'm ready to write this down. Can it be found on Spotify? Oh, you surprised me. Silence.
Yeah.
And do you do, is that the same for your classes as well?
Yeah, I used to, I don't play music in my classes now at all. I used to when I was doing face-to-face, but only at the start and at the right at the end after they'd come up from Shavasana. But mainly silence, because I think it's really important. People have very little silence in their lives. And so actually, if you go to a yoga class and it's really, really noisy, then actually you don't get the silence, you don't get the full whammy. So that's what I prefer, that's what I do.
Interesting. Thank you for that. And generally, thank you so much for talking to me, Karen. It's been really great getting to know you a little bit.
And it's been a real pleasure. It's been lovely. Thank you for having me on.
You're welcome.
She's a really crazy woman. Sorry I invited her now.
No, not at all. Not at all. So listeners, you can contact Karen about her Vibrant Living coaching program that she mentioned, and to arrange a complimentary mini Ayurvedic lifestyle coaching session, I'll give you her number. It's 07786 911 593. Her email address is Karen, that's, we know how that's spelled, it's Caron at redhatyoga.co.uk, and she's also on Facebook as at Karen Linley, or her business page is Red Hat Yoga. Please take a moment to tell her what you thought of the podcast. If you've got any questions for her, I'm sure she'd be happy to answer them. Thanks, Karen.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Bye.
You've been listening to That Yoga Woman's podcast with me, Jules Buchanan. If you like the show, please tell your friends about it, share it on social media, rate it, write a nice review, and subscribe to That Yoga Woman's podcast. Links and information can be found on the episode page in the podcast section of my website, www.thatyogawoman.com/podcast. If you'd like to show some support for the podcast, you can do that through PayPal. The donation link is www.paypal.me/thatyogawoman. The last thing I'll mention is my line of organic cotton yoga-inspired tops.
I designed a small range of vests, tees and sweatshirts that are perfect to teach or do yoga in. Have a look online, check out my shop on my website, www.thatyogawoman.com/shop. Have a look around my store and make an order. See you soon.